the phone, and we're going to make it official. Greetings to everybody. Welcome to the first class in a four-part series entitled Obatala, Four Paths to Equanimity. I'm super excited about this class, and I hope that we will be able to convey the kinds of teachings and instruction that are really going to help us deepen our understanding and our relationship with Obatala, the great divinity, the elder of all of the Orisha. Before we get too far into it, just to make sure everybody knows one another. Some people know me better than others. You know, we have a longer history for whatever reason. I'm going to be your instructor for this lecture series. My name is Obafemi Origuma, and I am an Ifa priest. I am an educator, a counselor, an author, and a member of the global Yoruba community. And this class is the direct result of my own personal experience with Obatala. I'm not an initiate of Obatala, but I am a child of Obatala. I'm a devotee of Obatala. And this particular class came into existence because of some experiences that I had in life, some challenges, really, that I experienced in my life that made me internalize some of the things that I had known about Obatala and some of the things that I had thought about Obatala in a much more real and direct way. And so this class, it brings into focus an expression of Obatala as a principle and a divinity and a practice that brings about a certain quality of life. Okay, and that quality of life is equanimity, what we in the Yoruba tradition might call afarabale. Afarabale is self-control. Okay, it's where you regulate your internal world in such a way that it blesses you with undisturbed peace. Okay, it's different from what we might call alafia, or it's different from what we might even call suru. You know, alafia is peace, is well-being. It's thing when things are like are favorable, right? That's something that is subjective, right? You know, if you throw obi and you throw the obi and you see all four facing up, we call that alafia. But we also recognize alafia as a signature, as something that's it's fleeting. You know, it's like $100 bill, right? It's there, it's whole, it's beautiful, it's crisp. But as soon as you make a purchase, that $100 bill is compromised. Now you got a whole bunch of smaller bills, right? Alafia is a peace and an enjoyment, but it's tenuous, right? Things are going to change. Don't bank on it. It's not solid. It's not firm. Whereas afarabale is something that is not it's not subject to the changes of your environment or the people around you. It's not even subject to change according to your own emotional state at one point or another. Okay, that afarabale, that equanimity, is an undisturbed peace that says, no matter what happens around me, no matter what happens with the people surrounding me, no matter what happens with my economic situation, no matter what happens with the political situation, no matter what happens with my own, you know, physical well-being, my health, or my emotional state at one point or another, afarabale says that I'm going to regulate my own quality of life. Okay, that is what we're calling equanimity, and that's what Obatala embodies. And I came to experience that, like I said, over the last, you know, like 2 or 3 years, where everything was seeming to, you know, be calling my attention to a lower vibration, or calling my attention away from the real purpose for which I chose to be in the world, okay? And the bigger picture that I want to really emphasize as to why this class is important and what we're going to communicate through the life and the episodes of Obatala is the bigger understanding of what Ifa says that we're here to do as Anya, okay? Because what I discovered about Obatala and what he means to my life is what I understand to be true for everyone's life in one way or another. And that is we all are here with a divine mission. We all are here with something essential that we must accomplish. There's something that is sanctified and holy and ordained about our lives, and it's important that we are able to maintain a focus and a commitment to that thing over all circumstances, over our own emotions, over our own thoughts, over our own habits, over our own limitations, over what the world might try to impose upon us. There's this greater mission that each of us must deliver upon, and that is what Ifa says is the good condition. Right, we know that in the holy Odu of Irosun Iwuri, Ifa determines what it means to be a human being. Enya, right? You are Enya. I am Enya. We are Enya. Enya is a human being, and Enya literally means Enya, one who is chosen, and is chosen by whom? We've been chosen by Olodumare to do what? We've been chosen by Olodumare to bring about the good condition. And Ifa teaches us in that Odu that it is not until we do bring about the good condition that we will be able to escape the wheel of rebirth. That is, we won't have to keep coming back to the world, right? Because we come to the world, to the marketplace of the earth, in order to work, in order to cultivate our skills, in order to improve ourselves and elevate our spirits, right? That's the purpose of being a human being. And you do that until you reach a level of perfection that manifests as the good condition. And once you've accomplished that level of elevation and purity, then you can stay in the heavenly realm with Olodumare. Okay? And so that is what all of us are aspiring to, right? And Obatala shows us a variety of pathways to achieve a certain quality of life, which is called equanimity. And as we have that quality of life of equanimity, then that allows us to make our own contribution to bringing about the good condition in a unique and special way, because other divinities embody something else. Shango is not going to, you know, show you pathways to equanimity. Ogun won't show you pathways to equanimity. Oshun won't show you pathways to equanimity. This is Obatala's particular gateway, all right, to a divine presence and a level of perfection. So what we want to exhibit is that, okay? Let me back up or you know, say a little bit more about how this particular class factors into what we're doing or what I'm doing with the Orisha Lifestyle Academy. Because I want you to understand that this class is a byproduct, or this is part of my own contribution in helping to make that you know, the good condition come about. The Orisha Lifestyle Academy is my, you know, is my baby. That's my flagship, you know, offering. Because after having worked as a priest, after having worked as an educator, after having worked as an organizer and a member of the community, you know, I've come to see that there's this combination of needs that can only really be satisfied by bringing people together and organizing some spiritual experiences and helping people to come in contact with a spiritual understanding in a collective way. And what I mean by that is, you know, I frequently will talk about my 1,000 consultations. You know, after I consulted, you know, for 1,000 people, I realized that there were patterns, there were trends, you know, that a certain percentage of the people were searching for, you know, identity. A certain percentage of the people were looking for power. A certain a percentage of the people were trying to get, you know, comfort. A certain percentage of the people were looking for just a sense of meaning and direction, right? There were these percentages, and then there's other small percentage of people who really just had immediate problems. They were suffering from some crisis, you know, maybe it was prison or it was sickness or something like that, that they just needed a solution to that problem, right? But those represented a really small percentage of the people. And so, you know, when I look at the real problems that I see people face, it would be like if I were a medical doctor and I'm looking and I see that, you know, people are coming in and they're complaining about maybe about asthma, and they're complaining about infertility, they're complaining about insomnia. But once I start to do a little bit of research as to what's causing those conditions, well, then it only makes sense for me to not treat those symptoms in isolation, but to start to treat the root causes, especially if I can see that the root cause for all of the main things that bring people in, there's only one cause for four or five different symptoms, right? And so that is what the Orisha Lifestyle Academy is all about. People are really suffering from a lack of direction. The people who really want to practice the tradition, they're just looking for a simple breakdown. What am I supposed to do next? Okay, what is it that we're dealing with? What's the raw material? And then what do I do with it first? What do I do with it second? What do I do with it third? Right? With that, the people are able to then, you know, sort of plug into the other resources that they need to be able to go forward with their lives, to be happy, to be fulfilled. And so the Orisha Lifestyle Academy has set out to identify all of the basic knowledge and the basic understanding, the basic assumptions of the tradition, and provide it for to you in a developmentally appropriate way, right? So we're introducing you to what you really need to know first, explaining to you how you go about doing that first, right? And it's really broken down into three segments. The first step is self-discovery, right? Until you are able to understand the raw content of what it means to be a human being in terms of Yoruba spirituality, if you don't know what that is, then you're going to be confused the whole time, okay? What is it? Who are you? That's the very first question. So we help you to understand that through all of our programs and activities, including this class. We're going to introduce you to some activities, some exercises, and some direct content that will help you understand who are you. The second step is once you know who you are, you've got an idea of what your raw, you know, material is as a person. The second step is we're helping you figure out what do you need to do, what needs to be your daily practice, how you establish some habits that you can do and things that you can not do every single day that are going to help you to get deeper and deeper into who you are, become better and better at who you are, not better at what, you know, this person is or better what that person said, but better at who you are, okay? And then the third step is to help you to get really clear about who you serve. You've got your resources, you've got to practice, you can hone your skills. Now, how do you direct it? Where are you going to take these gifts and these talents and these resources, and who are you going to serve with all of this mighty resource that you have discovered within yourself and you started to hone, okay? So as we go forward with the class, I want you to listen on at least two levels. Okay, I want you to take everything that we do, all the activities, all the exercises, and I want you to apply them on at least two different levels. Number one, I want you to think about it for yourself. I want you to ask yourself continuously, what does this mean to me? How can I apply this to my life today? Okay, the second level that I want you to think about is your questions, your doubts, your concerns, your excitement, your enthusiasm, the things that really, you know, touch you in this class. One way or the other, positive, negative, no matter how it impacts you, I want you to think about it relative to other people. How would my mother be asking this same question? How would my brother respond to that? How would my grandmother, how would my daughter, my son, my neighbor, my best friend, my uncles, my aunts, my clients, how would they also be asking these same questions? And how can I now also bring these questions to them? How can I help provide answers for them? Okay? So I want you to listen for yourself, and I want you to listen for other people, the people who matter most, the people who are most important to you, the people who you think about and you wake up for and you know, and you work for every single day of your life, okay? And, you know, with that, you're going to be able to come away with this from this class with much more than just, you know, another set of stories of or verses or, you know, things like that about the divinities that are, you know, in the abstract. Okay, so now with that said and done, I want to get my document here. I seem to have lost. We're going to get ready to dive into the class, and we're going to look at Obatala and the four paths of equanimity, okay? So the first thing that I want you to know is that our tradition is based on sacred text, okay? If you want to understand who we are and what we do, you've got to go to the text. It's not enough to, you know, read physics books or, you know, other, you know, scientific novels or journals or anything like that. You want to refer back to the sacred text. And in this case, when we're talking about the sacred text, there are two major sources of all reputable and verifiable knowledge about Orisha lifestyle. Source number one is Ifa. What is Ifa? Ifa is this vast spectrum of knowledge that comes from the Yoruba people, okay? Now, you've got Ifa that is like, it's just the system. It's just the matrix itself. It's like, so right now I've got these, you know, dictionaries and encyclopedias behind me, right? On a certain level, Ifa is just the system of how the knowledge is cataloged. Okay, you know, in a dictionary, or I guess it's on this side here, a dictionary organizes information alphabetically, right? And it's just this word means this, this word means that, this word means that. It's a particular system for cataloging data. Okay, that's a dictionary system. You got an encyclopedia. Encyclopedia is by subject. Right, and it's going to go into a greater contextual detail about a particular thing. Right, encyclopedia, dictionary. It's a different system for cataloging information. Ifa, on one level, is just a cataloging system of data. Ejiogbe, Oyekumeji, Iworimeji, Idimeji, and so on and so forth. It just is just that. That's one level of Ifa. Another level of Ifa then becomes the content that's in there. Ifa has scientific data in it, but Ifa is not a science. Ifa has religious data there, but Ifa is not religion. Ifa has historical data, but Ifa is not history. Ifa has artistic information, but Ifa is not an arts system. Ifa is filled with poems, poems, poems. Every verse of Ifa is a poem. But Ifa is not a literary art either, right? It has philosophy. But Ifa is not just philosophy. Ifa contains all those things. It's all concatenated into a system that is inseparable. You can't just extrapolate one, right, without totally crippling the other. It's really important, right, for you to understand Ifa, because people say Ifa and they think that they've defined it and everybody's talking about the same thing, but it's not. There are lots and lots of different levels of Ifa, okay? So the Ifa that we're referring to here is the Ifa that is providing historical, liturgical, or, you know, cultural, religious information about opatala. Okay, that's the ifa that we're talking about here. We're not even talking about the ifa of the, you know, who worships ifa as a onifa, as a babalawo, as a, you know, or onifa, you know, someone who just is a worshiper ifa. We're not talking about that even. We're just talking about ifa as a source of valid, irrefutable information about Obatala. Okay, through ifa, you're going to get, as I said, the history. You're going to get the cultural context. You're going to get the religious identity of each of the Orisha. Okay. The second source of information that we're going to use for this course is the Oriki. Oriki are like, you know, so let's say in an Odu, in five different Odus, which you could, you know, for example, you see in a class, we'll have a variety of Odus. One Odu will tell you why Obatala is austere, why Obatala does without. Another Odu will tell you why Obatala lives long. Another Odu will tell you how Obatala became a king, okay? It's going to tell you an episode. The Oriki is a stringing together of a variety of different episodes in the life of Obatala. So in an Oriki, you might have, you know, 100 lines. And in those 100 lines, it will tell you about, you know, 40 different Odu, okay? So we're going to draw from both Oriki and from Odu in order to explain the life of Obatala, okay? So all of, you know, that much is accounted for on the page 9 of the book or of the reader, which if you haven't by now, I hope you go in and download that that book, print it out, and start, you know, marking it up so you can understand who is Obatala and what does Obatala represent in the ritual spectrum of things. Okay. So let's look a little bit at the Oriki of Obatala. And then we'll be able to go into some of the stories about, you know, what Obatala means to us in terms of equanimity. And this is on page 12 in the reader. We're looking at Oriki Obatala. And it begins this way. He is patient. He is silent. Without anger, he pronounces his judgment. He is distant, but his eye rests on the town. He kills the initiate and rouses him to new life. He is playful like death. He carries the child away. He rides the hunchback. He spreads out his arms, the right and the left. He stands by his children. He lets them succeed. He makes them laugh, and they laugh. You, father of laughter, your eye is laughing. Immense granary in the sky. Old man with the strength of youth. You rest in the sky like a swarm of bees. The rich owe their riches to you. The poor owe their poverty to you. You take from the rich and give to the poor. Take them from the rich and give to me. Obatala, you turn blood into children. Come and create the child in my own belly. I own but a single cloth to dye with indigo. I own but a single head tie to dye with camwood. But I know you have 20 or 30 children waiting for me, whom I shall bear, I say. And so those are some of the Oriki of Obatala. You know, there's so many more that we use that, you know, that give you a breakdown of who Obatala is and what Obatala represents. Now I want to, you know, touch a little bit on Obatala as the embodiment of equanimity. Earlier I made, you know, a reference to, I alluded to the fact that equanimity is a form of emotional control and emotional stability that promotes or creates undisturbed peace. And this is what Obatala embodies. And the greatest benefit of Obatala's equanimity coincides with the highest blessing of Ifa. Okay? You know that there are five primary blessings of Ifa. There's long life, there's wealth, there's children, there's victory over enemies, and there's a spouse, right? So you got long life, you got wealth, you got spouse, you got children, you got victory. Those are the five primary blessings that Ifa will lay out for you. The most important of all of those blessings, the highest blessing of all, is longevity. Ire Aiku, long life. You ever go and you consult Ifa and you get the blessing of Aiku, you've gotten the highest blessing, you got the greatest blessing of all. Why? Because of all the other ones, if you get anything else but you have a short life, well, then your blessing is going to be short-lived, right? You get money, you get victory, you get children, you get spouse, but boom, you die a year later, right? You die before the age of 40, then, you know, the blessing, it doesn't even compare. Whereas on the flip side, you may not have all of the other elements of life. You may not have wealth, or you may not have a spouse, or you may not have children. You may not be victorious, right? But you're alive. And so as long as there's life, there's hope. And so if you live long enough, you live to be 60, 70, 80, 90 years old, you have time to accumulate all of the other blessings, okay? So the greatest blessing of all is long life. Ire Aiku. Okay? And equanimity is the most direct path to long life, right? And that's what we're going to see in Obatala's life, or at least in these four paths of Obatala's life. The goal of achieving equanimity, being able to enjoy undisturbed peace, is your most sure pathway to long life. The closest thing associated with long life is equanimity, undisturbed peace. Okay? So I'm going to go to page 13 in the reader if you want to come along with me, where we start to examine equanimity, the definition. The notions of balance, harmony, and serenity can be summed up as afarabale. Okay? It's what we would call equanimity. Afarabale means to control your body, basically. It's to exert a level of, you know, restraint. It encapsulates self-control, composure, gait, manners, diplomacy, and authority that emanates from an undisturbed calm. Here, it's important to emphasize the fact that while deep calm is certainly a virtue, it also helps Obatala to create strategic advantage. That's a major, like, breakthrough right there. That short paragraph took a long time to crystallize. If you can understand and internalize just that paragraph, I've done you a huge service right there. You are walking in Obatala's robes right there. If you can understand this relationship between balance, harmony, and serenity, right, as the attributes of Afarabale, this authority that emanates from an undisturbed calm, this sense of serenity and peace and stillness that comes from deep within yourself, that, again, as I mentioned before, it just cannot be interrupted by other elements. Not even your own internal feelings, your fears can't interrupt this calm. Your anxieties cannot interrupt this calm. Your hunger, your thirst, right? It cannot interrupt that calm. It's that's Afarabale. When you are deeply within yourself, and where is that calm coming from? That's the question that I want you to start to contemplate from within yourself. Where is this calm coming from within yourself? Okay? With the understanding that as you can tap deeper into that calm, where it's going to take you is to a place of ultimate victory, which manifests as long life. Here, Ifa gives us the key. The trap kills the striped rat. It remains flat. It calls all the giant rats. It remains flat. It falls on the snail, but cannot kill the snail. For 17 days, the trap tries to kill the snail, but it cannot. The snail remains indestructible. This was Ifa's declaration to Obatala, the benefactor of Igbo, one with demeanor so cool that he outlives all the other deities. Okay? Obatala is the one who is associated with longevity. Obatala is synonymous with old age. He is the one who, from the beginning, his coolness, his peacefulness is the thing that makes him indestructible. Okay? So here where Ifa is telling us in the name of the Babalawo that there's a trap. And the trap, it kills the rat. Now what is that rat? That rat is fast. The rat represents something that's agile, is quick, right? It falls on the giant rat, right? It flattens him out. The giant rat is not only agile and quick, but he's bigger and stronger, but he still is crushed by this trap. But this same trap, it cannot kill the snail. Repeatedly, over and over again, this trap is set, but it just can't get the snail. Why? Because the snail isn't running quickly, right? The snail isn't just hurrying here and there. The snail is slowly taking his time, making his way. And so he's able to avert the trap. He's able to identify the trap from a distance and save himself. And so the snail becomes indestructible. So the thing is that what Ifa is telling us is that the majority of the adversaries end up killing themselves. They kill themselves through their teeth by eating things too much, eating things that they shouldn't eat. They kill themselves through their feet by running too fast here and there. They kill themselves with their bodies, right, by allowing their impulses to drive them into activities that are ultimately going to lead to their demise, right? The snail is encountering all of these things little by little, and he's able to see the way in which it traps and kills others and protect himself, okay? That's the one that gave the advice. So all of that is just going into the name of the Babalawo that spoke for Obatala, whose demeanor was so cool that he outlives other divinities, okay? Obatala doesn't defeat himself. He doesn't allow his racing mind or his racing senses to lead him into death and destruction. The text goes on to tell us that strategically the importance of equanimity is equally important. Okay, so you've got a virtue kind of aspect of long life and equanimity, but then you've got where strategically equanimity positions you for strategic advantage. It gives you something that that creates more opportunities for you. Okay, here Ifa says that the eye that witnessed but did not disclose, the one who suffered yet persevered without complaint. Misfortune befell many, but did not remove them from home. Whatever a man bears, he should do so with equanimity. So here, those are all different levels of self-restraint. You see, but you don't say, right? Your eyes are taking in all kinds of things. You're observing, right? You're experiencing many things. But everything the eye see, the mouth does not have to say. The one who suffered but persevered without complaint, right? This is something that difficulty, hardship, adversity, uncertainty, doubt, suffering, pain, it falls upon you. But, you know, my mother used to say, wear it like a loose garment. Don't let it be something that constricts you. Don't let it be something that defines you and limits, you know, what you can imagine and envision for yourself. You may not be able to go right now, but be still and know that the time will come that you'll be able to move freely. Misfortune befell many but did not remove them from home. This one is letting us know how even though you may encounter a difficulty, Things may be unexpected. You may have all kinds of challenges that you didn't anticipate, but it's your ability to stay and not remove yourself, not to quit, essentially. If you quit, the game is over. If you quit, the challenge has come to an end. But as long as you're able to stay the course and endure whatever the unexpected challenge was, whatever the unanticipated problem, whatever the limitation that cropped up out of nowhere, it's your ability to not allow yourself to be removed that will allow you to ultimately persevere and win. Whatever a man bears, he should do so with equanimity. And that line just basically sums it all up. All of that is the introduction to the verse of Ifa that tells us about when Ifa was cast for a man named Olokose. Olokose was told the sacrifice that he could prevent a loss. Olokose was like that striped rat, like the giant rat, like the fish. He was dexterous. He was able. He was fast. He was skillful. But those things weren't enough in order to keep Olokose in the game, so to speak. So Olokose depended on his skill. He depended on his ability. He depended on his talent, and he refused to sacrifice. And he underestimated the fact that there were others in the field that were going to best him. One of them was a man named Agunfan. Agunfan then came from behind, and he defeated Olokose. He took all of his wealth. He took all of his glory, and he replaced Olokose as the number one. This Ifa tells us how strength without equanimity is nothing but a weakness, right? Because you accumulate, as we said, you can accumulate all these different blessings, all these different wealth and resources, but if you don't have the ability to stay and endure, then you end up giving it all away. And that's essentially what Olokose did. He set himself up for defeat, basically. And this exact same sentiment is expressed on the other side that it tells us about Obatala, where Obatala was the one who he didn't always embody equanimity. Okay. And this is the part about Obatala where the main lesson comes into play. I've been talking to you about equanimity, you know, from the side of, you know, where you just can, you can just find it from within and you can live it and you can be it and you can have it. But that's not how Obatala came into it. And once we start to look at this particular verse of Ifa that tells us about an episode in Obatala's life, will understand that you too have lived it. It's only now a question of you choosing to learn from the lesson, internalize the lesson to the point that you can now move in a different way. In this particular verse, Ifa tells us a very popular story, a well-known story about Osalufon. Osalufon is another name for Obatala, Osa Olufon. Osa, Orisha, Osha, Olu, Ifon, the divinity who it presides over the kingdom of Ifon is Obatala. Ifon is a kingdom where Obatala's worship is very prominent, and we're going to come to that a little bit later on. But Osalufon is another name for Obatala, and this time Osalufon was planning to go and visit Shango in Oyo Kingdom. Osalufon was about to set out on this journey, and his wife, Yemowo, she was, you know, preparing all of his things, and then she said to him, she says, Baba, I know you're going to visit your friend Shango, but I had a really bad dream, and I saw all of your fresh white attire, and it was dirty. It was filthy. Osalufon said, what could it be? What kind of dream was that? That's, you know, there's nothing for me to worry about. And he ignored the advice of Yemowo, and he decided he was going to go on this trip anyway. But still, what she said stuck in his mind. So he went to go consult Ifa. And he went to see Orumila, and Orumila told him, he says, Obatala, you're going to go and take a journey, a long journey. And on this journey, you're going to have a big problem. You're going to lose your glory. You're going to be shamed in this journey. You should sacrifice, and you should not go. Okay, so here this is, you know, coming into Ephah as a twofold process. On the one hand, you have what Ephah tells you, right? And you got the sacrifice. Sacrifice, you know, snail water, shea butter, white hen, etc. But the second part is the taboos, the advisories, right? The observances. Ephah says, don't take the trip. Abatala decided, you know, just like Olokose, you know, what's there to worry about? I'm going to see my friend Shongo. And so Osalufon decided he was going to take the journey anyway. He starts out on the way, and as he got six blocks from his house, he got to a three-way intersection, and at that intersection, he saw Eshu. And Eshu was there, and he had, a nice-sized gourd of palm oil. And if you have ever worn white clothes and you've been in contact with palm oil, you know, palm oil is the last thing you want to see. So, but there's a proverb that says that, you know, one hand is not enough to lift a gourd to one's head, right? So if you try to put anything onto your head, people carry their wares on their head in Yoruba land. Somebody's got to help you get it up on your head. So immediately it's good courtesy when you see somebody trying to put something on their head, you help them. So when Obatala saw Eshu trying to lift this palm oil up, he was obliged to help him. So he managed to do it very carefully without getting himself dirty. And as the oil is getting up to the Eshu's head, Eshu slipped and the oil spilled and Obatala was filthy, covered with oil. So he ran back home, he changed his clothes. Then he went back out. He came to that same intersection. He saw Eshu again. This time Eshu had a bigger calabash of palm oil, and he was lifting up to his head. Obatala, help me. Obatala went to help him again just as they got it to the top of Eshu's head. Oops, it slipped again. Obatala is doused in palm oil a second time. The third time, Eshu has a calabash, you know, like 20 by 20. This is the biggest calabash in all of human history. Huge. And Eshu was, you know, Obatala looked, he says, no, this time I there's nothing I can do to help you. And Eshu got mad. He said, oh, you refused to help me? He dipped his hands into the oil and he splashed Obatala with the palm oil. Obatala was covered with palm oil, but he didn't have any more white clothes to change. He said, forget it. I'm going to go. I'm making this mission. These three delays have slowed me down. And he made his way to see his friend Shongo. So right there, you got to be wondering, right? Within yourself, you know, what is it that compels you to go forward and do things that you're getting warnings, you're getting, you know, that you should stop, but you want to continue for whatever reason. You have an idea, you have a vision that you've got to go forward, and it's compelling you to just overlook what are obvious, you know, signs to say, stop. You know, that impulse is what was driving Obatala at this point. So Obatala made his way. He got all the way to the perimeter of Oyo Kingdom. There he found a beautiful white horse. He recognized the horse right away. He said, this belongs to Shongo. It must have gotten away. I'm going to surprise him when I come in, and I'm going to bring the horse in to greet him. And so Osalufon grabbed the horse by the reins, and he started to bring him in to the palace of Oyo. As he started to approach the palace, the guards saw him, and they said, that is Shongo's horse. He said, yes, I know. He said, yeah, we've been looking for that horse. It was stolen a couple of days ago. You, sir, are the thief, and we're going to fetch a mighty fine prize for bringing you in as such. Osalufon said, what are you talking about? I'm not a thief. I'm bringing this back to my friend Shongo. He said, yeah, you can explain it to him later. And so they took Osalufon straight to the dungeon. They locked him up. He was still remained calm, right? He says, you know, he's been doused with oil. He's got oil spilled on him. Now he's been accused of being a thief. He's been arrested. And he's there, and but in it all, he's trying to maintain a level of peace and serenity. But inside of him, you know, his blood is starting to boil. He's very frustrated. A couple of hours go by. He doesn't hear from Shango. He's nothing. More hours go by. The night the sun goes down, he sleeps and he wakes up in this cell. No word from Shango. Half of the next day goes by. Finally, this is like turning into weeks. Days have turned to weeks. And weeks have now started to evolve into a month. Okay? A month and a half. Obatala is just fuming. There's so many times he started to curse Oyo. He was going to curse Shango. He was going to, but he never got to the point where he just would curse them. He just was so dejected and angry on the inside. And as Obatala's anger and frustration and disgust started to grow, because he's looking at himself, he's dirty. His beard is starting to grow in, is unkempt. These are all things that are totally contrary to Obatala's nature. He's always an immaculate white. He's very well groomed. He's a clean and polished divinity. Now he looks like, you know, somebody who's been living at a trash dump, you know. But he won't curse Shango. But he's so far out of his element. He's so uncomfortable, and his frustration is just emanating from him. And as his frustration grows and increases, so do the problems of Oyo. A dark cloud descends upon the kingdom of Oyo. Sickness starts to invade. People who are, you know, doing business can't get things done in the market. Pregnant women can't deliver. Even when they called the diviners to cast Ifa to find out what's going on, their messages were totally confused. They call another diviner, he asks, and his message is totally confused. They finally call in a third diviner. The Babalawo looks, and he, before he goes to cast Ifa for Shango, he casts for himself, and Ifa says you need to make sacrifice with snail water. So he gets the snail water, and he washes his face, and his eyes are able to see clearly. So when he goes to cast Ifa for Shango, immediately Ifa tells him, there's a man who's of great importance, who's being held unjustly in your prison. You need to go there and release him. So Shango said, I want to know who this is. Instead of just sending his guards there, he went down to see for himself who is locked in the dungeons. When he got there, he found none other than Osalufon Obatala. Immediately he recognized him. He said, oh, release this man immediately. Shango prostrated himself. He threw himself down on the ground, and he greeted Obatala, you know, and gave him total deference. He got Obatala out. He marched him back to the palace. He had him bathed. He had the finest white clothes prepared. And then he sent word throughout all of Oyo Kingdom, I want everybody to get bundles of white cloth, to get mounds and mounds of shea butter, to get efun chalk, to get snails. Go and gather up all of the choicest sugar cane and the best ingredients and pull them all together. And they brought all of these things with wealth and money and offerings, and they just piled them up for Obatala. They got the drums. They got the band. They had a huge celebration. It was like the biggest Obatala festival that Oyo had ever done. They did for Obatala at that point. And so that was how Obatala was celebrated and vindicated. Okay, it was his, ultimately, that was where he learned total equanimity. That was where he learned to restrain himself at the deepest level, because he wanted to curse Oyo. And from a certain perspective, he would have been justified in doing so. But he did not give in to his own internal fire. He didn't give in to his anger. He didn't give in to his own frustration. Instead, he maintained a level of internal peace. He maintained a level of undisturbed peace in the face of great adversity. Now, when you look at that that story, ultimately, yes, it ends well because Obatala is celebrated. But I want you to really focus on the way that Obatala was celebrated. What was the greatest benefit to Obatala? Sure, him getting wealth and getting offerings and being celebrated was very big. That's the external thing. But the bigger blessing for Obatala was maintaining a level of inner peace. The greatest blessing for Obatala was being able to grapple with himself and still maintain a level of calm and decorum. Because you know that once he had time to reflect, he had to have thought about the fact that his wife, Yemowo, told him, Obatala, don't take that trip. He had to have reflected on the fact that Orumila told him, Ifa says, don't take this trip. He had to have reflected on the fact that he saw Eshu not once, not twice, but three times Obatala saw Eshu. And each one of those times, he was so close to his house, and the encounter was telling him, where you're going is not going to be good for you. Turn around. Right? So it would have been very convenient for Obatala to become self-defeatist. Right? How often do you encounter, right, when you think about your life, when you think about mistakes that you've made, when you think about the ways you've overlooked obvious signs, signals, indicators that you should stop what you're doing and do something different, but you refuse to adhere to good sense? Do you beat yourself up? Do you look down upon yourself? Do you denigrate yourself? Is that voice in your mind, right, replaying over and over and over and over about how inept you are, how incomplete you are, how foolish you are, how stupid this was, how backwards this was, right? Do you run yourself into the ground because you know that you made a mistake, right? See, the first thing that Obatala had to do is overcome himself. He had to have been thinking while he's missing his wife. He's in jail. His wife is at home. And he's thinking, wow, she told me that I should have stayed, right? But he didn't succumb to that, okay? He didn't succumb to that. Likewise, Obatala was there. He knew he didn't steal the horse, you know? He knows that he's a great king. He knows he's a majestic figure. It was obvious by looking at him that he's not a horse thief. But this lowly guard accused him of being a thief and then locked him in jail and kept him there. This person didn't even have enough sense to go and ask. He didn't report this to Shango. Obatala could have easily blamed this guard for his problem. He could have been just fixated on the fact that this guard mistreated him. He did him wrong. It's his fault. But Obatala didn't succumb to blaming the guard. He could have then looked and he could have blamed Shango. Shango is the king. He's supposed to know what's going on in this kingdom. He's supposed to know who's imprisoned, but he didn't. He didn't succumb to that, right? But he did feel bad for where he was, okay? So Ifa is not telling us that you should not have feelings, right? Obatala did have feelings. He rightfully felt bad. And those feelings were growing. They were just, you know, welling up inside of him that this is awful. This is terrible. This is despicable. Okay? But he did not succumb to those feelings. As those feelings grew, so did the pressure in the environment where he was living. So that lets you know that your connection to your outside world is the world is resonating with you. Okay? The world is resonating with you. There's a whole environment that is in sync with your internal world. And the more strongly you emanate something, the stronger will be the vibration out in other sectors of the world. It wasn't until Shango experienced the hardship of that he was able to call someone in to help them and solve the problem. Okay, and once they did solve the problem, they realized where the convergence of the problem of the kingdom was the problem of Obatala, And when they solved the problem of the kingdom, they solved Obatala's problem, and everybody was blessed in the end. Okay, so equanimity there gives you an example of how your internal control will reflect in the blessing and the benefit of other people around you. Your environment will be blessed by your ability to go the distance, to be patient, to stay with the problem longer. Don't quit. Okay? Don't quit. Don't back out. Don't give in to anger. Don't give in to hatred. Don't give in to fear. Stay in the game. Keep your mind in the game. Keep your heart in the game. Claim your feelings and your emotions and your experience, but stay in the process all the way through until the very, very end. That is the primary essential lesson of what equanimity can do for you and for everyone around you. Okay? So with that being the sort of the goal, that being the prize, I want you to make a moment now and go to your, you know, to your own the Facebook group here, where we are in the Orisha Lifestyle Academy, and make your own note. I want you to tell one thing that you want to embody through equanimity. Tell what is one goal that you can see on the horizon, one blessing that you know you can anticipate if you can just regulate your emotions. You can retain your peace, right? Share that on the group. What's one thing that you know you can achieve if you're able to just stay in the game? If you don't give in to anger, if you don't give in to fear, if you don't give in to impatience or greed, right? What's one thing that you know that you can achieve? And I'm actually going to put one in here. I'm going to give you a minute to just think that through, right? Because we've been going for essentially an hour, and I've been just, you know, hitting you with a barrage of different things. But based on all that, I want you to reflect within yourself. Think about those instances wherein, over time, you've been accumulating an experience. You've been having a sequence of experiences that tell you something, and you might feel like, oh, you want to stop. You want to quit. You want to pull back. You want to, you know, you just want to be angry, okay? Or you just want to be sad. Or you haven't. You haven't quit. You haven't backed out. You haven't dropped, you know, the ball. Or you have dropped the ball, but you picked it back up. You have gotten angry, but you decided to calm down. You've been sad and distraught, but then you cleared your, you know, you wiped your tears and you washed your face, and you're like, no, I want to keep going. Say why. What do you think is possible that keeps you in the game? Okay. So we'll make a little pause. I'll give you a minute here to think that through. Now, one thing, what is it that you might achieve? What is it that you wish you could accomplish? And it doesn't have to be, you know, anything grandiose. It could be just graduating from a class. It could be just saving up money for you to buy a house. It could be staying in a relationship or starting a new relationship. It could be, you know, your job or your child that you really are frustrated with. You know, what's one thing that you feel tempted to just give in to some impulse, but something has kept you from doing so? What is that? What is it? What do you think is possible? What might you accomplish? Okay. Okay. So if you haven't had a chance to, you know, put something down on the group, or you haven't, you know, you're making notes right now, I want to challenge you to come forward. If in a day, in the next 24 hours, really, actually, just give it, after you've heard this, within 24 hours, I want you to come and make a note, you know, and make a comment that says, this is what I believe is possible. If I can exercise equanimity, I believe I may be blessed this way. If I can maintain my equanimity, I wish to be blessed this way. Okay? So I want you to do that. Now let's start to look at the four pathways to equanimity, okay? Equanimity is not just an instant state of being, it's a balance, okay? And so in the group, in the Orisha Lifestyle Academy live group, there is a graph. I've got a Venn diagram that shows four overlapping circles, and it shows the four pathways of equanimity: austerity, happiness, creativity, and generosity. Okay, and right now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to just tap into the first pathway of austerity. Austerity is strictness, abstinence, and restraint. And this is one of the ways in which Obatala discovers equanimity. It really takes all four. You know, it's balancing all four of them that you are able to maintain this level of equanimity. So if we imagine, how is it that Obatala was able to keep his cool under fire for this long, drawn-out period, months going on where he was in trouble that he really shouldn't have been in? How did he lose? How did he prevent himself from losing it? Well, it's not just being calm. You know, there's a balance of this, of austerity, you know, strictness of denying oneself the indulgence in certain impulses. There's happiness, finding happiness and experiencing happiness, creativity, and generosity. So right now we're going to tap into austerity, okay? Strictness, abstinence, and restraint. And this is the very first module, okay, of the class, which is starting on page 17, okay? The path of austerity, and we look here again at the verse of Ifa, that's Ogbedi, that tells us this way: turkeys sprout goatees from childhood. Thus declared Ifa to Obatala, the Ancient of Days, when he was offered the crown of Ifa. Obatala refused and said, "It is sufficient if I am called the Ancient of Days, Baba Aruba. Well then, hail to thee, elderly sage of Ifa." And that's the holy Odu of Ogbedi. So here, you know, austerity is synonymous with modesty. Okay, that's a defining characteristic of Obatala's lifestyle. In that verse of Ogbedi above, we see that Ifa explains to us how Obatala was given this opportunity to ascend the throne, but he had a different set of values. Okay, and we go line by line, and we can see where the verse is, you know, sort of highlighting the attributes of austerity kind of in an itemized way. It's kind of giving you a checklist, right? The first thing is that turkeys sprout goatees from childhood. That means that, you know, a turkey is born with a goatee, right? There are no baby turkeys. There are no baby little turkeys, no young turkeys. All the turkeys are wise, okay? That's letting you know that a turkey is different from, you know, that some are different from others. Some of us are venerable and mature by nature. We don't have the luxury of being flighty and you know, childish, as it were, right? A turkey, if you're a descendant of a turkey, then you're an elder, okay? That's what the first line is letting us know. So the Ifa is telling Obatala, you're an elder, okay? And you got to act like an elder. The verse goes on to tell us that Obatala then was given this opportunity to ascend the throne of Ifon. And Obatala said, I don't want to be the king of Ifon. It would be better that if you called me the Ancient of Days, right? I would much rather be old than the king. My authority is being aged. That's where my glory is. That's where my joy is. That's where my power is. I'm not interested in the social trappings of power and authority, okay? And so Obatala chose longevity over popularity, over institutional power. And this level of austerity is very consistent with Obatala's entire persona, which it totally demonstrates restraint, okay? It's not an exaggeration to say that Obatala is characterized by his renunciation of material possessions and physical pleasures. In stark contrast to other divinities, for example, Obatala does not eat salt. He does not eat palm oil or pepper. And those are standards of Yoruba food. All of the other divinities eat salt and palm oil. Matter of fact, when you put palm oil and salt together, the taste is literally sweet. So this is like a staple of Yoruba food. All the divinities consume palm oil and salt. Obatala is the only one who does not. No pepper. Yoruba food is notoriously spicy, but not Obatala's food. Obatala is also the only divinity who demands total uniformity in his color. All of his divinities wear white, right? That is not a requisite of other divinities. The others are free to wear whatever they like, patterns and all. But Obatala, you know them because they wear white clothes all the time, okay? They eat white food, and they sacrifice and offer white food to Obatala. So in this sense, we see that austerity is synonymous with extreme simplicity and asceticism, okay? If you ever have worn white clothes, you know that white clothes, they're very demanding. You just can't be careless with your actions and where you go. Where you sit, where you walk, you've got to be mindful of it. And so that is an emblem of Obatala's white, of his practice and his lifestyle. He's got to be strict. He's got to be focused. He's got to be, you know, paying very close attention to where he's going and what he's doing. Because if not, it's going to show, okay? If you've been sloppy, you've been careless, you've been, you know what I mean? You've been careless with your day, and you're wearing all white, it's going to show. People are going to know what you have for breakfast. They're going to know what you have for lunch. They're going to know what you have for dinner. They're going to know where you sat down. All of it's going to show on your clothes if you are not careful, okay? Most importantly, Obatala practices austerity as a pathway to equanimity. The whole point that Obatala is trying to achieve is equanimity, this undisturbed peace. In one of his oriki, Obatala is praised as this. Without anger, he pronounces his judgment. That is in the same way that Obatala's food is not spicy, neither is his judgment. He is dispassionate. In the same way that his color, his clothing is not colorful, neither is his self-expression. He is beyond provocation. By associating himself with all things that are light and non-irritating, Obatala can ensure that he has a pure heart, he has a long life, he has cheerfulness, he has power, and most importantly, he has spiritual authority. Gentle foods, clothing, and habits promote a peaceful and not agitated mind, which is needed to experience life in an impartial way. An agitated state of mind resulting from overstimulation obstructs the pathway to equanimity. And so here Ifa is showing you in that particular story how Obatala's entire lifestyle positions him for this advantage where he can be a judge that, you know, he can deliver tough news in a way that's not going to excite people. It's not going to offend people unnecessarily. Not that he's not going to tell the truth because he doesn't want to be offensive, but he's going to be able to tell people difficult things in a way that's not hurtful. It's not harmful. It's just a simple truth, right? Have you ever known people that you are, you know, they're able to talk to you? And you know that they're going to be able to tell you the truth. They're going to be able to tell you what nobody else is going to be able to tell you, but you're okay with hearing it because you know they haven't judged you. You know that they aren't putting you down. They're not condemning you. They're not trying to hurt your feelings. they're really just giving you the truth. You know, that is the quality of Abatala. It's beneficial to the other people, but it's also beneficial to Abatala because, as I said before, the main thing is that he's not engaging in an internal dialogue that is harmful either. So where Abatala makes a mistake, he's not replaying this negative message in his mind. He's not, you know, punishing himself over and over and over and over, right? His conversation and internal dialogue is equally gentle. It's equally peaceful, okay? And so equanimity is an inside-out process. It's what you see Abatala demonstrate out with the other divinities is what he is demonstrating firstly with himself, okay? His mind and his heart are peaceful. They are relaxed. They're not spicy and agitated, okay? And one of the really key learnings that I came away from with preparing this course and exploring this chapter of Abatala's existence in my own life is that provocation is the weapon of the powerless. Right? When people are provocative, when people are talking loud, when people are calling names, when people are trying to bait you into some kind of an emotional exchange, it's because they don't have power. And they're trying to you know, gain power by eliciting a response from you. Right? If they can get you to bite on any level, then they've gained a little bit of power. They have a little bit of leverage on you at that point. And so equanimity is that power, is that increase of your power base where you don't allow yourself to be, you know, drawn into lower vibrations, okay? But it starts from the inside. You've got to calm your inner world. You've got to pacify your passions from the inside out. And it's not that you don't have them, but it's just that you don't let them rule you, okay? And you don't allow them to rule your thoughts. You don't allow them to rule your words. You don't allow them to rule your action. You are the one that has the ability to choose. And you're choosing your words, your thoughts, and your actions based on this understanding that equanimity is what's going to grant you longevity and strategic advantage in the long run. So what I want you to do now is I want you to refer to page 18. I don't think I've gotten any of these yet, so I'm gonna pause right now. And the only thing that's going to matter right now is that you make the time now to go back to this lecture. You listen to this lecture. I want you to listen to this lecture at least three times, okay? At least three times before our next class on next Wednesday. And in that time, I want you to go through the self-exploratory exercises, the physical, emotional, and social exercises, okay? Go through them and start to ask yourself some really important questions about what you can do to reconstruct your life in a way that will put you at a greater sense of peace and serenity, okay? And I want you to make your report again on this Facebook group. I want to hear from everybody who's in the class. Give us an update. What was your greatest takeaway from, number one, the exploratory exercises, and number two, what was your biggest takeaway from the personal practices, the personal connection activities, okay? That will be where we will wrap our class up for today. If you got any questions, please pose them here on the thread associated with this video, and we will be very quick to entertain those and respond to the best of our ability. But that does conclude our very first class on Abatala. In our next segment, we're going to get into the second attribute of Abatala in the second module, which is the path of creativity. I thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to talking to you all soon. Aboru, aboye, aboshishe.